We begin today in Job chapter 29, where Job now begins thinking about, shall we say, the good old days, and how he wishes things were back to the way they used to be before all of this disaster occurred in his life. So Job chapter 29, verse 1, Job again took up his discourse and said, "Oh, that I were as in the months of old, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head, and by his light I walked through darkness, as I was in my prime, when the friendship of God was upon my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were all around me, when my steps were washed with butter, and the rock poured out for me streams of oil." Now, those last two phrases are a little strange to us, but for them, the idea of swimming in butter means that you've got more than enough. And the same thing with swimming in oil, more than enough. And so you should understand that idiom in that fashion. So he's thinking about the way it used to be. Verse 7, "When I went out to the gate of the city, when I prepared my seat in the square, the young men saw me and withdrew, and aged rose and stood." So he was so respected that when he arrived at the city to take his seat of leadership there in the area of the gate, that young people got out of the way. And the older people stood up to show respect toward him, which is definitely very interesting. "Princes refrained from talking and laid their hand on their mouth. The voice of the hum of the nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to the roof of their mouth." So Job was respected even by the highest levels of society. They would defer to him, allow him to be the one that does the talking in their conversation, because they respected his wisdom that much. And that makes good sense, because we know that he was a very godly man. At the beginning of the book, we saw that that was the case. The blessing of God was upon him, and therefore he would have been a good guy to go to get wise advice. Verse 11, "When the ear heard it, it called me blessed, and when the eye saw it, it approved, because I delivered the poor who cried for help, and the fatherless who had none to help him." Now that is also kind of a pushback against something that was said against him a while ago. And that is, "Oh, Job, you cheated the fatherless. You took advantage of the weak, and this is the reason you're being punished." And now he bears testimony, no, that was not the case. "I was greatly respected because I helped people out." Verse 13, "The blessing of him who was about to perish came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban." So he wore his righteousness like clothing. It was just that natural to him. Verse 15, "I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame," meaning blind people came to me and I helped them get what they needed. "Lame people came to me and I helped them get what they need. I was a father to the needy, and I searched out the cause of him who did not know." So he was the champion of the people, of all levels of society and all levels of ability. "I broke the fangs of the unrighteous and made him drop his prey from his teeth." So here he pictures the unrighteous people, the people that try to take advantage of the weak and the disenfranchised as if they were lions coming to steal sheep. And so he says, I was the shepherd that jumped in there and smacked them in the mouth and knocked their teeth loose and made them let go of the people they were trying to take advantage of. So he was a defender of all people. Verse 18, then I thought, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. So he thought, you know what? I'm going to die in my own home a ripe old age. Verse 19, my roots spread out to the waters with the dew all night on my branches, my glory fresh with me and my bow ever new in my hand. So he's got a lot of illustrations here, a lot of images that he pictures his life was like. So he's like the good shepherd. He's like the tree planted by the water. He is like the hunter or the warrior that's got his bow ready to go in his hand. Verse 21. Men listened to me and waited and kept silence for my counsel. And after I spoke, they didn't speak again, and my word dropped upon them. They waited for me as for the rain, and they opened their mouths as for the spring rain. So he now pictures himself as being the springtime showers that everybody was looking forward to. I smiled on them when they had no confidence, and the light of my face they did not cast down. So he was a pleasant personality, and he brought people back up when they'd been taken down by their situation. So he was a really good man, exactly the sort of person all of us would want to aspire to be. I chose their way and sat as chief, and I lived like a king among his troops, like one who comforts mourners. So he says, I did all of this for the people within my sphere of influence, and that sphere was huge. I took care of the needy and poured myself into their lives to their benefit. Now, why does he bring all this up? Because he'd like for it to get back there again, but also because he's frustrated at what happened the moment bad things started occurring in his life. Because of the philosophy that's been pushed by his friends that bad things only happen to bad people, the moment tragedy struck him, everybody assumed he was a bad guy that deserved all this. So how did they treat him later? Verse 1 of chapter 30. But now they laugh at me. Men who are younger than I, whose fathers I would have disdained to set with the dogs of my flock. So he does make a judgment call here. He says, some of these young punks whose dads I would never have even hired to take care of the dogs that take care of my sheep, they're now laughing at me, making fun of me. Verse 2, what could I gain from the strength of their hands, men whose vigor is gone? Through want and hard hunger, they gnaw the dry ground by night in waste and desolation. He's talking about how bad these guys were. They're now making fun of him. They pick saltwort and the leaves of bushes and the roots of the broom tree for their food. So they're getting the scrubby stuff out of the field for their meals. They are driven out from human company. They shout after them as after a thief. In the gullies of the torrents they must dwell, in the holes of the ground and of the rocks. So these guys are bad enough that they're not even welcome into polite society. And yet they are mocking Job. Among the bushes they bray, under the nettles they huddle together. He thinks of them like wild donkeys. A senseless, nameless brood, they have been whipped out of the land. And now I have become their song. I am a byword to them. So he's become the butt of their jokes. He's become the one that they sing stupid songs about and against. Verse 10, they abhor me. They keep aloof from me. They do not hesitate to spit at the sight of me. This is a long-standing physical practice, that when you thought badly about a person, you would spit at the mention of their name or at the sight of them. It was as if they were a bad taste in your mouth that you had to get rid of. Because God has loosened my cord and humbled me, they have cast off restraint in my presence. Again, he's making the assumption that all the bad stuff that's happened to him is directed by God specifically. He does not know the backstory like we do. He does not know that it's actually Satan that's been doing all of this stuff. So he's kind of pushing the reality here when he says those words. Verse number 12. On my right hand, the rabble rise. They push away my feet. They cast up against me their ways of destruction. They break up my path. They promote my calamity. They need no one to help them, as though a wide breach, as through a wide breach they come, amid the crash they roll on. So he pictures them as basically taking advantage of the situation and dragging Job even farther down by their mistreatment of him. Terrors are turned upon me, verse 15. My honor is pursued as if by the wind, and my prosperity has passed away like a cloud. And now my soul is poured out within me. Days of affliction have taken hold of me. So this is kind of his woe is me speech, where he's just expressing how bad it feels to have all of these wicked people, some of whom he had actually helped. They've now become wicked against him, mistreating him, talking him down. And then there's also physical issues that he's still dealing with. Remember, he was struck with open sores from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. And these sores were crusting over and then breaking back open again. They have maggots in them. He's scraping all of that out. And then he says this about the physical pain that's related to all that. Verse 17, the night racks my bones, and the pain that gnaws me takes no rest. So he's constantly in pain. Some of you know what this feels like. You have been going through, or have gone in the past through, a physical ailment where you just ache all the time. And no matter how much pain reliever you take, it still hurts. Well, that's where Job's at. Verse 18, with great force my garment is disfigured. It binds me about like the collar of my tunic. It doesn't feel good to be in clothing. God has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. So again, he says God's the one that's done this, even though it's actually by the permission of God that Satan has done it to him. I cry to you for help, and you don't answer me. I stand, and you only look at me. You have turned cruel to me. With the might of your hand, you persecute me. You lift me up on the wind, and you make me ride on it, and you toss me about in the roar of the storm. For I know that you will bring me to death and to the house appointed for all the living. So here he's talking to God, saying, you've done all this to me. I know eventually I'm going to die. And why? Why are you doing this? He will continue to appeal for God to come and explain this to him. And eventually God does come, but not to explain, to basically say, you wouldn't understand all the ins and outs of this, and you just need to trust me. I know that's a hard message of this book, for all of us to learn that when we go through the tough times, we don't get to tell God, you have to explain. That's not in our ability. God is high above us and does not have to explain his choices regarding what happens in our lives. We have to just trust it will be to the good for some purpose of his. Verse number 24, yet does not one in a heap of ruins stretch out his hand and in his disaster cry out for help? Did not I weep for him whose day was hard? Was not my soul grieved for the needy? So now he's back on the idea, why doesn't anyone pity me? I used to pity them. Why aren't they showing the same favor back toward me now? When I hoped for good, evil came. When I waited for light, darkness came. My inward parts are in turmoil and never still. Days of affliction come to meet me. I go about darkened, but not by the sun. I stand up in the assembly and cry for help. So he's just depressed, and he's describing depression here. You know, I'm in darkness constantly, and I'm not talking about the sun. And I never feel restful. My body aches all the time. And all I want to do is cry out for someone to help me. That's what verse 29 is about. I am a brother of jackals and a companion of ostriches. So he yips like the jackals and does the little trilling sound of the ostriches. My skin turns black and falls from me, and my bones burn with heat. So he's got a fever. And a lot of those open sores, you know, they crust over and big scabs fall off. That's what he's describing. My lyre is turned to mourning, and my pipe to the voice of those who weep. So, you know, the things that used to be happy songs are now sad songs in his life. Chapter 31, he now proclaims again that he is innocent of sin, because that's what his friends are accusing him of. I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? So he has made the agreement before God that he will keep his eyes to himself when it comes to sexual thinking. And so he's not going to stare at some young woman and undress her with his eyes and in his mind have sex with her. He's going to maintain his righteousness before God and his vow of fidelity to his wife, even in his heart. Verse 2, what would be my portion from God above and my heritage from the Almighty on high? See, if I sin, if I cheat on holiness, then what would I get? Is not calamity for the unrighteous and disaster for the workers of iniquity? Does not he see my ways and number all my steps? So God is aware, God knows me and everything that I do. If I have walked with falsehood and my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed in a just balance. Let God know my integrity. If my step has turned aside from the way and my heart has gone after my eyes, meaning whatever his eyes have seen and he wants, that's what he decides he's going to get no matter what it costs. And if any spot has stuck to my hands, this would be sinful activity, like some sort of disease or spot on his hand. And let me sow and another eat, and let what grows from me be rooted out. So now he brings judgment on himself. He calls down curses on himself. If I'm actually a sinner, then let bad things happen to me. If my heart has been enticed toward a woman, If I've lain in wait at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind for another and let others bow down on her. Woo, that's some tough wording there. He basically says, you know, if I really am a bad guy, then let people take all my stuff away, including my wife. Now, this is over-the-top talking, but it's the emotion of the moment. And we know that. We have all been there, haven't we? Where we have said more than what we should have because of the emotion of the moment. And when we get, you know, back to our right thinking, we regret having said these things and even have thought them. But we can appreciate he's in a rough situation. So let him who is without sin cast the first stone in judging him for this. Verse number 11. For that would be a heinous crime that would be an iniquity be punished by the judges. That is, if he were actually a sinful person doing all these nasty things to other people. For verse 13, if I have rejected the cause of my manservant or my maidservant when they brought a complaint against me, what then shall I do when God rises up? When he makes inquiry, what shall I answer him? So if he's actually cheated the people who worked for him, he says, I wouldn't have any recourse when God came down hard on me, because that would be fair. I wouldn't have a thing to say back to him, because if I did the crime, I need to pay. Did not he who made me in the womb make him? And did not one fashion us in the womb? So he's upholding the idea of equality here. Just because somebody works for you does not mean they're less valuable than you. God made you both. And therefore, you need to treat everyone around you as if made in the image of God. Now, this is the essence of the golden rule, to do unto others as we would have them do unto us. Verse 16, if I have withheld anything from that the poor desired, or have caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel alone, and the fatherless has not eaten of it. Now, he's actually talked earlier about he didn't engage in this type of behavior. He actually did share his food with the poor and the needy. He did stand up and speak for people that needed assistance. So he's saying here very freely, if I had done this sort of garbage, then I deserve the punishment of God. Verse 18, for from my youth the fatherless grew up with me as with a father, and from my mother's womb I guided the widow. If I have seen anyone perish for lack of clothing, or the needy without covering, if his body has not blessed me, and if he was not warmed with the fleece of my sheep. When it says his body's not blessed me, it means that you gave them something and they said, oh, God bless you, right? If I have raised my hand against the fatherless because I saw my help in the gate, then let my shoulder blade fall from my shoulder. So let me become disarticulated. Let me come out of socket. Let my arm be broken from its socket. For I was in terror of calamity from God, and I could not have faced his majesty. If I had made gold my trust, or made fine gold my confidence, if I've rejoiced because my wealth was abundant, or because my health, try that again, or my hand had found much, if I had looked at the sun when it shone, or the moon moving in splendor, and my heart has been secretly enticed, and my mouth kissed my hand, meaning I worshipped the sun and the moon, then also, this also would be an iniquity to be punished by the judges, for I would have been false to God above. So he says, if I'd done any of this garbage that I'm talking about here, I would have deserved all the stuff that's happening to me right now. Verse 29, if I have rejoiced at the ruin of him who hated me, or exulted when evil overtook him. See, we got to be careful about that. Rejoicing when bad things happen to people. If I had not let my mouth sin, I have not let my mouth sin by asking for his life with a curse. If the man of my tent had not have not said, who is there that has not been filled with his meat? The sojourner has not lodged in the street. I have opened my doors to the travelers. So he's going back and forth here saying, if I did the bad stuff, then I deserve bad stuff. But the fact of the matter is, I did the good stuff. I actually helped people come in off the street so that they didn't have to live out in the elements. Verse 33, if I've concealed my transgression as others do by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, because I stood in great fear of the multitude and the contempt of families terrified me so that I kept silence and didn't go out of doors, meaning if the crowd was doing things to people, I was afraid of them and didn't step in. See, we need to stand up for what is right, even when the majority is for the wrong. Oh, that I had been, I had one to hear me. Here is my signature. Let the Almighty or Shaddai answer me. Oh, that I had the indictment written by my adversary, because in the indictment, it would say what the crime was. Surely I would carry it on my shoulder. I would bind it on me as a crown. I would give him an account of all my steps. Like a prince, I would approach him. If my land has cried out against me and its furrows have wept together, if I have eaten its yield without payment and made its owners breathe their last, then let thorns grow instead of wheat and foul weeds instead of barley. So may the curse of God be on me if I've done the bad stuff these guys are accusing me of. And then it says the words of Job are ended. When we come back tomorrow, we find out there's another guy sitting here, and he decides to take a whack at Job next.